It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, Kim Munson. That's spelled MONSON.com. And sign up for our weekly newsletters to keep you apprised of upcoming guests, our op-eds. This op-ed that I did on the homelessness industrial complex has really been getting a lot of steam. So be sure and check that out. Steve, I didn't realize it, but it really hit a nerve.
Well, it should be picking up steam because you really you went to the most fundamental aspects of this, and it's it's just such a revelation to think that this is going down right before our very eyes in terms of the dollars being poured into it and what we're getting out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, and not to mention the salaries involved.
I know. It's pretty eye-opening. So be sure and check out my website. That's KimMunson.com, and check out the Homelessness Industrial Complex. Very important show planned for you today. Today is really a historic day. It will be the State of the Union address by President Trump this evening. And then tomorrow it looks like there will be the vote on whether or not to impeach him. And last night was the Iowa caucuses, and it looks like that's pretty much a disaster, Steve.
It is. I hit the road this morning, and Michael Pelka had already kind of broke the news of this farce that's going down in Iowa. Basically, the Iowa Democratic Party has really messed up. There's no other way to say it. They can't seem to tabulate the results from yesterday, and they're not sure how soon they're going to get them.
Well,
and yet, all the major players were, you know, doing their little victory lap, suggesting that they were they were coming out on top, and now it's on to New Hampshire.
Well, I'm seeing the headline right now. It says Iowa caucus results are delayed over inconsistencies. Bear in mind, Steve, that this is the party. The Democrat Party of today is not the Democrat Party of JFK. This party wants more and more control of your life. They want more and more of your money. And, they are continuing to work towards socialization, and that means control over these main things that, you know, if they're freed up, they make our lives better. And that's like transportation, education, housing, energy, water, broadband, communications, health care, across the board. These are the people that want to control all this, but they can't even get a caucus right.
Well, stay tuned. It has been suggested that this might be a purposely internally caused glitch to maybe take this, whatever.
Maybe somebody was leading that they didn't want to be leading. Could that be the case?
Well, that, but also we're not so sure that the DNC is really thrilled that the state and the heartland is leading the way in the process, that maybe we can get Iowa out of the picture.
Well, I guess so. So we'll find out. We'll keep an eye on that. And then again, tonight will be the State of the Union address. This is going to be historic. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is going to be sitting right behind Donald Trump. I'm sure everybody's going to be watching her facial expressions all evening long,
trying to keep her dentures under control.
Steve.
Well, wait a minute. Was it how many years ago? Well, let's see. Let's count it up.
Was it last year?
2017, I guess. She was not the speaker yet, and she was actually sitting out in the gallery, if that's the right term. And she, the cameras just couldn't stay away from her, and she sat there the entire hour just fuming and burning, and I guess just couldn't wait for the day that she could sit up in that seat behind him again, which she did last year, mm-hmm. And she led the ladies of the body in wearing white.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about
suits,
that.
And she was an obnoxious twit.
Yeah.
So
did you just say that?
I did. And let's see what she can come up with this time. Although, you know, you can get vindicated when you do what we do because you have a thought. 2 weeks ago, I had this thought. It's like, oh, my gosh, all that's going down here in the month of January or now February with this impeachment process. What will a State of the Union address actually look like? And if they, well, you just suggested it, envision it. There stands the president. Over his left shoulder is Queen Nancy. And who knows what kind of shenanigan they're going to pull in the wardrobe department this year in terms of the white pantsuits and whatnot. So, and then, you know, the prez, he's going to be smirking at him. He's going to be kind of just giving him that smile. And
you know, I think that actually that's probably going to be very positive because, you know, he continues to be a master of communications. And here, you know that people are going to be tuning in to see what happens. And I think he's probably going to deliver a very presidential speech.
Yes,
he's going to talk about the successes he's had. And I hope that people listen, that they can take the filter off of all of this hatefulness towards this man and listen to what the results have been for everyday hardworking people. There is so much more work to be done, though, Steve. I was talking to a young person the other day, and actually Dr. Jill Vecchio had said, Obamacare has done exactly what it was supposed to do, and it basically has made it almost unaffordable for that middle class, you know, that blue collar, that tech T-shirt middle class, because the premiums have gone up significantly, and then the deductibles are so high that, in essence, it is just totally squeezing these people that are out there that are trying to get ahead. And then the whole school loan thing has really done exactly what Obama wanted to do as well. He basically took over the student loan program and put it into the federal government's hands. And so immediately, you know, it skyrocketed as far as the amount of debt that was incurred. I mean, I've heard stories that kids were able to sit in their PJs in their parents' basement and get $35,000 in school loans, not really realizing that they were going to have to pay that back. And of course, now you've got all of these Democrat candidates that are talking about free this, free that, free this. But what happened with this is that it has now, you know, become such a big number to so many of these kids. They're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to pay this off? And there's a bit of hopelessness in that. So the student loan program and Obamacare has done exactly what they wanted it to do, to make these things so unaffordable, to wrap this debt around these kids' necks and kind of mire them in hopelessness. And when we have Dr. Brian Dmitrovic on, you know, he wrote the book with Larry Kudlow on JFK and the Reagan Revolution, lowering taxes, lowering regulations, getting the economy going. If we can get this economy really booming, these kids are going to be able to get jobs. We'll start to see them have the hope of paying that off. We've got to do something about health care, though. This is not okay. It is just really taking away a lot of hope of people that are trying to, you know, to get ahead and trying to push them over to government dependency. And that is what I think both of those things have tried to do. And so it's going to be a very interesting evening tonight, Steve.
Well, I guess I'm maybe being a little bit too transparent here with the way my mind works.
It's your birthday. You can do whatever you want today. Happy, happy birthday.
You didn't have to bring that up. Hey, 4 years ago, I stopped having birthdays. Didn't you get the...
I didn't get the memo.
Jeez. Anyway, I'm being a little bit too transparent here in the snarky department. It has been suggested that, yes, the president will give a great speech tonight. He probably will not mention any of the events of the last 2 months, only because he wants to focus on what's been accomplished so far and where, you know, what's coming next. So,
yep. So, will you check and see what time that is? I can't remember what time it is.
Yeah.
Okay. And while we're doing that, as we look at these issues, it's freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And if something is a good idea, you should not have to use force. And so that's why we look at that with this particular looking glass. Before we get into the rest of the show, though, it's thinking about inspiration. We need some inspiration. And Calvin Coolidge, you know, he was an American politician and lawyer who served as the 30th president of the United States from 1923 to 1929. And actually, I think under Coolidge, federal spending went down, and I think they actually started to get the debt down as well. He was a Republican lawyer from New England, born in Vermont. Coolidge worked his way up the ladder of Massachusetts state politics, eventually becoming governor of Massachusetts. His response to the Boston police strike of 1919 thrust him into the national spotlight and gave him a reputation as a man of decisive action. The next year, he was elected Vice President of the United States, and he succeeded to the presidency upon the sudden death of Warren G. Harding in 1923. Elected in his own right in 1924, he gained a reputation as a small government conservative and also as a man who said very little and had a rather dry sense of humor. He was born in 1872, died in 1933 at the age of 60. And this is such an amazing quote. He said, "Nothing in this world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. The slogan, 'Press on,' has solved and always will solve the problems of the human race." And that's Calvin Coolidge. So, Steve, it's your birthday. So I've got a good funny for you. Are you ready?
Will you let this lie, please?
Here we go. A Florida senior citizen. Are you a senior citizen? Oh, you don't have to answer that. It's your birthday, but do you want to answer that?
Continue, please.
Okay. A Florida senior citizen drove his brand new Corvette convertible out of the dealership. Taking off down the road, he pushed it to 80 miles per hour, enjoying the wind blowing through what little hair he had left. Amazing, he thought as he flew down I-95, pushing the pedal even more. Looking in his rearview mirror, he saw a Florida state trooper, blue lights flashing and siren blaring. He floored it to 100 miles per hour, then 110, then 120. Suddenly he thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I'm too old for this. So he pulled over to await the trooper's arrival. Pulling it behind him, the trooper got out of his vehicle and walked up to the Corvette. He looked at his watch and then he said, "Sir, my shift ends in 30 minutes. Today is Friday. If you can give me a new reason for speeding, a reason I've never heard before, I'll let you go." The old gentleman paused and then said, "3 years ago, my wife ran off with a Florida state trooper, and I thought you were bringing her back."
Good one. Yes.
You like that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. You know what? Let's go to break just a tinge early here. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is the place to watch all the games. We're now into Avalanche Nugget season. And, of course, they've got all the TVs so that you won't miss any of the action. Wednesday is all day, if you dine in, all day wing day for $15.99. And my husband stopped by and picked up a variety of wings for the Super Bowl, and they were delicious. And the coleslaw was delicious as well. So a couple of things. You can drop by, and you can eat at the restaurant. You can have Hooters wings delivered right to your front door. You can stop by and pick them up on the way home. For more information, go to my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Look at the sponsors, and be sure and patronize all of these. I can highly recommend all of those sponsors that you see there, and they are the reason that we are on the air. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And sign up for our newsletter so we can keep you apprised of everything that is happening out there. Just a quick note, because of the snow, we were planning on having a great festival for your birthday. I thought that we were going to have Jen Hewlin with Water's Edge Winery and Patty Kurgan, our entrepreneur and our researcher, and Susan Koshevar, the owner of the 88 Drive-In Theater. So you've been hearing those promos throughout yesterday and this morning. Because of the snow, we decided to reschedule that. The girls are going to come in on Valentine's Day, provided the weather's okay. We thought there's no reason to have them, you know, out on the road. And Rob Nadelson had reached out to me to say that he had a really interesting piece that was in the Epoch Times regarding, he says, Dershowitz was correct. Impeachment does require criminal type conduct. And so it's very timely to have Rob on. He's going to be on in the third and fourth segment to just break this down because, of course, the vote for impeachment is tomorrow. So that's why we had a little change in things, Steve.
Oh, and by the way, State of the Union speech commences at 9 Eastern, 7 Mountain.
Okay, 7 p.m. tonight. So get your popcorn and sit down and you can watch what's going on. Speaking of watch what's going on, Patty has pulled the bill of the day is Senate Bill 2151, Administration of the RTD Regional Transportation District. And what they're going to do, and Joshua Scharf has a really good piece in the Complete Colorado about this, but basically the state legislature, I think, is working to try to take over RTD. And you've got to imagine this, because RTD, you know, is its own taxing authority. And so the state legislature would love to get a hold of that because there is money involved. So what Senate Bill 151, this is the lowlights of it, is one, it provides factors for the RTD district to consider in making decisions about services, route planning, and rates. It prohibits the district from discriminating against people with disabilities in the provision of transportation services and prohibits discrimination against an individual on the basis of race, color, ethnicity, national origin, in the provision of transportation services. A person who is subject of a violation of the prohibition can bring a civil suit in state district court. So just think about what that's going to be, Steve. Is people can bring this suit, and once again, you're going to have taxpayer dollars involved in the court. I mean, this is really not a good idea. It authorizes the Transportation Legislation Review Committee to review the district's compliance with the act, requires the district to comply with requests for information, and requires the committee to hear public testimony concerning the district's compliance with the prohibitions on discrimination. So you see this whole discrimination thing here, and compliance is another one of those code words for force. It adds two additional voting board members to be appointed by the governor for 3-year terms, one to represent constituents with disabilities and one with experience in equitable transportation planning. It adds the state treasurer and the executive director of the Department of the Transportation as non-voting ex officio members of the board. It establishes contribution limits in the Fair Campaign Practices Act for candidates for the board of the district. You know what? That takes away, that is a direct assault on free speech. Because what we see is these rules are put in, these laws are put in, and then one side cheats, the other side, if they make a mistake, they bring them out, you know, and accuse them of campaign violations. People should be able to donate to campaigns without these kinds of laws, okay? I just want to make a statement on that. It requires the board to meet monthly instead of quarterly and to live broadcast its meetings whenever practicable. It requires members to be physically present to vote except in the case of a documented medical condition. It allows the board to adopt procedures related to the removal of an elected or appointed member. It requires the board to adopt procedures to reduce the compensation of a member who is absent from the member's official duties. It allows the district to provide commercial and retail services at its facilities. I wonder what that means exactly, Steve. Does that mean that RTD is now going to compete with a private enterprise? Just think about that. You've got a taxing authority that then could provide commercial and retail facilities or services at its facilities. I mean, what could that be? Next, it requires the state auditor to conduct audits of the district's pension plans and unfunded pension liability, the district's organization structure and compensation, and the cost efficiency and effectiveness of the district's competitive vehicular service policies. Can you believe the state legislature wants to get into all this?
No.
Okay, get this one. Provides whistleblower protections to employees of the district and of entities contracting with the district, includes the district within the scope of the state auditor's fraud hotline, makes the district's directors and certain employees subject to ethics requirements of the state constitution, and clarifies that the district is subject to existing codes of conduct for public employees and amends other provisions related to the administration of the district.
Wait a minute. Ask that question again. Can I believe the, how did you pose that?
The state legislature
wants to get into this?
Yeah.
I blurted out no, but yet the more I sit here and kind of sift through it, maybe yes.
Maybe yes, because look at all the control. it puts in place situations where RTD can be sued. Take a look at this, what it talks about regarding requirement of the board members. I don't think that the board members are actually compensated when and the hours and hours that they have to spend to be at those meetings. I mean, it's very difficult to, you either have to be retired or independently wealthy or, you know, really juggling things to make that work. And so this is really going to make, have more and more control over the RTD board by the state legislature, you know, which is now controlled by a bunch of radical activists down at the state house. But they're wringing their hands. They're looking at all the money that's really, it's going to be about money and power is what this is all about, Steve.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because when stories like this one kind of protract after a while, I kind of evolve, what's behind this. Did this all start with the state basically kind of looking at RTD and saying, you guys are screwing up left and right, and if you don't get your act together, we're going to have to help you?
Yeah. There was actually Patty had pulled a news article. This was, maybe 4 weeks ago. So you could see that was the first kind of shot across the bow.
Yeah.
That we knew that this thing was coming down. It was a foreshadowing that we were going to see this.
Well, as you're going down, I mean, the way Patty has this laid out, there was like a dozen bullet items there. And as you read through them all, not all, but almost, well, many of them, it's a direct increased cost.
Oh, most definitely. And
adding more staff, doing all the things that
Well, and it's in adding two more board members. It's kind of like FDR when he threatened to pack. What was it? The Supreme Court. So by the governor now being able to appoint two more members, it starts to dilute your vote, because we vote for RTD board members. So it dilutes their vote. And let's just very quickly get to Joshua Scharf, his piece in Complete Colorado. He says, RTD reform bill leaves taxpayers waiting at the station. And these are the three biggest provisions that, you know, as we went through that, but he's able to really drill down on this. He says, it will ditch the requirement that 30% of operating costs come from fares. Okay. Number two, it adds these two new appointed members, one representing the disabled community and the other representing disadvantaged communities. And then three, it grants disabled and disadvantaged groups who felt they were underserved the ability to serve or to sue RTD. You think that RTD is not doing well now? Just wait till we have the state legislature doing this oversight on it.
Well, he fleshes that out a little bit. Like, quite frankly, the first requirement, the one about the 30% of operating costs come from fares, is that that's a disaster in the making. Because if you think that they're struggling now to meet their operating budget, and now you're going to take away that requirement, so where does that mean the rest of their operating costs come from? Well, we know the answer to that.
So could you see possibly with the state taking this over that instead of increasing taxes, that there's going to be some kind of increase in fees? But, you know, we've seen the carrot on all, and this is the way socialism works, is you've got carrots, you've got incentives, you've got tax breaks, you've got backfills with subsidizing things, and then ultimately when that carrot doesn't work, because we're seeing, when I drove over here, it's 10 degrees out, who wants to be standing out at a bus stop or on a train station waiting for a train? I saw empty trains, I saw empty buses. But the carbon footprint, the footprint that those empty buses and those empty trains have every day, I mean, why isn't environmentalists all over that? So the next thing that's going to happen is we're going to see force. And we've already seen the subtle force to try to get people out of their internal combustion engines. But we're going to see, I think, more and more force. And you take away the, you know, freedom to drive, the freedom for people to be able to move where they want to, when they want to, and you get all to that power and control, Steve.
I think one of the Super Bowl commercials was from Porsche, and obviously pushing their all-electric vehicle. And I thought, how many millions of people are watching this? And it still does not go back to the fundamental. It's like, what are you charging those vehicles? How are you charging those vehicles? You know, by what energy source? So,
right, and we've not talked about the environmental concern regarding disposal of those batteries once they're gone. And then China basically is really working to gain more and more control in Africa, and that's where many of the rare earth minerals come from for electric car batteries. And so we're using policy to shut down our energy source that we have here of affordable, efficient, and reliable energy sources to push us into something where we'd be dependent on China. We have to ask why these people are doing this. But I kind of have myself all worked up. I think I want to talk to Jason McBride about these tax retirement workshops that's coming up this week because he's helping people. Hi, Jason McBride.
Hey, good morning.
It's Steve's birthday.
I know. You told me. I told him happy birthday.
Okay. Well, good.
He's coming for cake, too.
Oh, okay. Did you tell? I guess, Steve, we didn't tell. I had a nice little surprise for you this morning.
You did. And it's right outside the studio door. And every time I walk past it, there's no doubt what's in the bag.
Jason, I got up early and I made Steve my very special sour cream coffee cake. So come by and have some, okay?
Very good. Is anybody going to jump out of it is the question.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. So, but hey, let's talk about these workshops that you have coming up this week. They're right around the corner, right?
Yeah, coming up pretty quick on Thursday and Saturday, Kim.
Okay, and some strange things can happen with taxes once you're retired. Can you give us a little color on that?
Well, yeah, Kim, most people are going to be receiving Social Security in retirement, and the taxation of your Social Security is based not only on how much your benefit is, but also on how much your other income is. So as your other income goes up, so does the taxation of your Social Security, which makes things get a little bit weird.
No, even weirder than most tax-related issues?
Well, yeah, it could be for sure, but everybody, it's truly bizarre math, Kim, because remember, as little as none of your Social Security might be taxed, and as much as 85% of it might be taxed.
But it's not at an 85% rate, right? And at least not unless Bernie wins the election.
Right, yeah, and that's a common concern that it's taxed that high, but it's not, at least not yet, as you say, Kim. It's just that up to 85% of your income from Social Security can be included as taxable income, and it gets taxed at whatever rate you're at once your 1040 is all done for the year. But where it gets weird is that the percentage of your Social Security that becomes taxable, it rapidly increases with each dollar of other taxable and even some non-taxable income that you receive.
Those are just the words that you want to hear when you're retiring, rapidly increasing and tax.
Yeah, you're not kidding, Kim. Now, I know you know Bruce Larson at our office. He's one of our advisors here, and he actually wrote a book about taxes in retirement. So he'll be doing the presentations at some of the workshops. Now, this spins my head, but Bruce says that each extra dollar of income you receive in retirement can cause another 85 cents of your Social Security to be taxed. So, in effect, on that income, your marginal tax rate can be 185% of what you might expect.
Okay, Jason, what is a marginal tax rate?
Well, Kim, the simplest explanation, it's the tax rate you pay on the next dollar of income you receive. So if you're in the 22% bracket, the next dollar you received is taxed at 22% all the way up until you hit the 24% bracket. However, if that $1 of income causes another 85 cents of your Social Security to end up being taxed, well, think about it. Your real effective tax rate on that dollar of income is over 40%.
Oh, man, this sounds like stuff dreams are made of. For a Sanders Warren ticket, that is. It also sounds like getting the skinny on this is something everyone should do. So how can people get registered for your workshops?
Well, Kim, again, it's either Thursday or Saturday here, this Thursday or this Saturday. We have three locations to make it as convenient as possible: Parker, Arvada, and Windsor, Colorado. You could sign up at airpresidential.com. That's A-I-R, presidential.com. Or just give us a call, 303-694-1600.
Okay, that's right. Make sure you tell them you heard about it from the show, and you can sign up at my website as well. That's kimmunson.com. Jason, thank you so much. You know, the care that you put into our conversations every morning is the same care that you bring to your clients. So thanks so much. And again, go to kimmunson.com, and there's a big, right, you know, big spot right there that you can sign up for that. Jason, we will talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great show, Kim.
Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, Rob Nadelson has this very important piece in the Epoch Times that Dershowitz was correct. Impeachment does require criminal-type conduct. And so we'll talk with Rob Nadelson when we come right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. And you may have taken a look at the newsletter and also our promos and thought you were going to hear Jenny Hulin and Patty Kurgan and Susan Kochevar in studio with me today. But a couple of things. I mean, it's very, very snowy, and I got this email from Rob Nadelson that he had this piece in the Epoch Times about Professor Alan Dershowitz and his claims at the Senate. And so it worked out, Rob. You were supposed to be on the show today, so welcome.
Hi, how are you, Kim?
I am good. And you are a constitutional expert, and you've written a book, The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant. So let's talk about this piece, though, that you have in the Epoch Times. This is pretty amazing. The title is Dershowitz Was Correct. Impeachment Does Require Criminal-Type Conduct.
It is amazing, and one of the things about it is that it represents a very great change in my own opinion.
Wow.
I wrote in my book, The Original Constitution, and I've written subsequently, that the term high misdemeanors, the constitutional phrase, as you know, for impeachment is treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. But we know from the founding era that that word high, which modifies crimes, high crimes, also applies to misdemeanors. So it's high misdemeanors.
Okay.
I had written that high misdemeanors essentially meant breach of fiduciary duty, the breach of the kind of duties that people owe who manage other people's affairs. Well, Dershowitz got me thinking again. And I said, gee, you know, what is it I haven't looked at? I had looked at all the sources that constitutional scholars usually looked at. But in this area, I had not examined the law books of the 18th century. I said, well, gee, maybe they define high misdemeanors, because those law books have helped me out previously. After all, the Constitution is a legal document, and it was drafted mostly by lawyers. And sure enough, I find that the term high misdemeanors was very common in 18th century law, and it didn't generally mean breach of fiduciary duty. It meant something much more serious.
Where do you find these books, Rob?
In 2005, I spent a research sabbatical at Oxford University, and I spent a lot of time in their law library and somewhat less time in their general library and some time in the library of the Middle Temple, which is one of the four institutions for training barristers in England. What's interesting about the Middle Temple is where a number of our own founders, like Edmund Rutledge and John Dickinson, got their own legal education. And so I became very familiar with the books at that time. In the interim, a publishing company started putting online a lot of 18th century sources that included many of these books. So I became familiar with the books at Oxford. I photographed critical pages of many of them, but I also found them increasingly online. And since I now knew what to look for, I've got this whole huge library of English case reports, of treatises on the law, of what are called digests, where they take bits of the law and they arrange them in alphabetical order. So that kind of information, dictionaries also. And I also checked, Kim, to see which of these English law books, because they mostly are English, actually were used in America. And so naturally, there were a lot of competing law dictionaries. But when I learned that the law dictionary of Giles Jacob was the most popular in America, well, then that's usually my first stop when I look for law dictionaries. And they all have some really interesting things to say about high misdemeanors.
Okay. Well, this piece, you know, we're kind of going through this step by step. But first of all, I find it kind of interesting. I mean, you are an expert on the Constitution. And after all these years, for you to hear Dershowitz, you know, say something that challenged you, and you're like, I'm going to go check that out. And you said you were skeptical. But as you checked it out, you seem to find something that changed your mind. I find that, first of all, intellectually honest to make sure that you're continuing to challenge yourself on these very important issues that are facing our country right now, Rob.
Well, thank you. We have too many people out there who hold themselves out as constitutional experts, and in some cases have the credentials of constitutional experts, but their attitude is whatever I like must be mandated by the Constitution, and whatever I don't like must be prohibited by the Constitution. I'm sorry, law and history is not that way. It's simply the way things are, not the way you'd necessarily like them to be. I mean, I've also encountered situations where I've had to change my mind in a direction which I find politically unpleasing, that I didn't like what I found, but I reported it nevertheless, and we could talk about that someday. But let's talk about high misdemeanors, okay?
Okay, let's do. And what is a misdemeanor?
Well, today we think of it as a lesser offense. At the time of the founding, a misdemeanor was any crime, whether it was treason, the worst crime of all, or whether it was, going too fast on your carriage through town.
Okay.
All of those were misdemeanors. And so what the law did is they categorized these crimes. All crimes are misdemeanors, but at the very top there's treason. High treason it's called. And because there was a petty treason, but let's just focus on high treason. That was obviously disloyalty to king and country, or in the United States is defined in the Constitution as giving aid and comfort to the enemies of the United States. And the penalty for that was a really heinous punishment called drawing and quartering, which I'll spare its description right now. Then another type of misdemeanor, a little lower than that, were felonies. Felonies included all the things we think of today as felonies, like burglary, arson, murder, rape. What distinguished felonies in 18th century law, though, is that they were all punishable by death. And it was death not by drawing and quartering, thank goodness, but by hanging. And this vocabulary, by the way, was carried over directly to the United States. I found statutes passed by Congress in the 1790s that use exactly the same vocabulary, as does the Articles of Confederation. Then below felony were serious crimes that did not merit the death penalty. Assault is a good example. Allowing a traitor to escape, if you abetted his escape, assisted his escape, then you were guilty of a felony. But if you simply, allowed him to escape and didn't do anything, then that was a crime, but it didn't amount to a felony. Bribery is another example. Those offenses were called high misdemeanors, and they were punished by very stiff fines and jail sentences. So that in 1794, 1797, and 1798, Congress passed a series of laws which designated as high misdemeanors certain actions that tended to interfere with American law or American foreign policy, designated them as high misdemeanors, and provided that they were punishable by anywhere from 1 to 5 years in prison and by fines up to $5,000, which was a lot of money in mm-hmm. those days.
Mm-hmm.
In all my research, I could find only one non-crime that was designated a high misdemeanor, and that essentially was medical malpractice because of a danger to human life. So just to give you – just to let you know that this isn't just me talking. Here's a sentence from the dictionary by Nicholas Bailey, a popular dictionary issued in the 1760s, so just about 10 years before the American Declaration of Independence. High misdemeanor, a crime of a heinous nature, next to high treason. Here's a definition from Chambers' Cyclopedia, a very popular, very large, detailed encyclopedia issued in 1778. High crimes and misdemeanors denote offenses of heinous nature, next to high treason. So we're not talking here about an improper conversation with a foreign official. We're talking here about serious crimes. Here's Blackstone, probably the most. I'm sorry, no. Here's the Encyclopedia Britannica of 1778. Misdemeanor, in law, signifies a crime. And it goes on to say every crime is a misdemeanor, but we call the most serious ones felonies. And so you can see the pattern here that that a high misdemeanor is not simply a breach of fiduciary duty or maladministration, as was proposed at the Constitutional Convention. The word maladministration was suggested and rejected by the founders in favor of high misdemeanors. So that suggests that Alan Dershowitz was right all along. I don't think that Alan Dershowitz actually checked out all these legal sources. I think he reached the right conclusion, maybe a little bit by accident, but it is the right conclusion.
Okay, fascinating. Let's go to break, Rob, because it looks like the vote is going to occur tomorrow. At least that's what I think is going to happen. I have I have a few other questions, though. If you would, I'd like to have you compare Trump's defense team to the House managers and how you think that those arguments looked, because I'd love to get your perspective on that. So this is Kim Munson. I'm talking with Rob Nadelson about his really important piece in the Epoch Times and really goes through that Alan Dershowitz was correct. Impeachment does require criminal-type conduct. And let's go to break. When we come back, we'll be right back with Rob Nadelson.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and on the line with me is Rob Nadelson. And he is has a really important piece in the Epoch Times. Dershowitz was correct. Impeachment does require criminal-type conduct. And just a quick note, Rob, I was at a meeting this weekend, and somebody pulled out the Epoch Times and said, this is the newspaper that people should be receiving, that it has good reporting, and the op-eds are op-eds, but they keep most of the opinion over on the op-ed page. And, I mean, you have been published in the Epoch Times on a number of different occasions, Rob.
I'm one of their regular columnists. By the way, for those of you who don't have access to the Epoch Times, I will tell you that this morning my article was republished in Complete Colorado.
Okay.
And so you can just enter Complete Colorado in your browser. I also wanted to mention the implication of all these findings, Kim, and that is, of course, that the articles of impeachment are they don't state a case. I never thought that the obstruction of Congress was a valid grounds for impeachment. I did think that the abuse of power, or as they should have called it, self-dealing count, the first count, could be a basis for impeachment if it were supported by evidence. Big if there. But now it appears that both impeachment articles are legally deficient because they don't state a high misdemeanor, because they don't state a crime or criminal-like behavior. So under the circumstances, the Senate would simply be justified, I think, in dismissing them. As far as the Epoch Times is concerned, you know, when I first picked up a copy of it back about 5 years ago, I thought it was pretty amateurish. It was available in one of the airports in Montana, and I wasn't terribly impressed. But over the years, they have pulled together a very good team of reporters and an increasingly good team of columnists, myself excepted, perhaps. But so when I was writing for the Daily Caller, and when I finally got frustrated by some of the policies of the Daily Caller, I was looking for another place to go. And investigation found that the Epoch Times, while it didn't yet have as much traffic as the Daily Caller website, was surging and really is becoming the conservative-leaning newspaper of record. I wouldn't really say that it's completely unbiased or completely – it does tend to lean conservative even on its news pages.
Okay.
But the reporting is very good. I've worked with a number of the reporters. They're top-notch. And you will get information that you get nowhere else. So I do strongly recommend the paper. As always, I never recommend that you ever rely upon just one
right.
source for news, though.
Right.
I mean, I often read The Guardian, which is a left-leaning paper coming out of England, in order to get a better perspective.
Well, and you need to make sure that you don't have just one filter. You know, we work really, really hard to always make sure that we are correct and telling the truth, but you know it's pretty clear that we have an opinion on the way that things
should
go.
And there are some, and while papers tend to lean left and right, there are some that do at least have journalistic standards, and certainly the Epoch Times does, and certainly the Guardian does. I increasingly wonder about the New York Times or the Washington Post, though.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, the Denver Post has destroyed itself.
It really has. It's really unfortunate. I want to ask you.
It's going to be a niche paper in the future, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And expensive, too. And, you know, a couple of other places to look here in Colorado. There's Complete Colorado. There is Colorado Politics, the Gazette. You know, they're also, I think, working on journalistic
integrity. Colorado Politics is excellent. Complete Colorado, again, it leans right, but it does some really top-notch reporting. The idea of there being a purely objective newspaper that always does the right thing, if that were ever true, it's certainly true no longer. So you do have to pick and choose.
Right. And always listen to the Kim Munson Show, too, because we're working hard to bring these things forward.
And now you're talking about the top notch.
You got it. Hey, Rob Nadelson, a couple of things, though. I read the complete transcript. I finally I've got to read this. And I think that people need to understand, first of all, what Adam Schiff said that the transcript said. It's not in there. The guy was not telling the truth. And weren't there like 20, 25 different people that regularly listen into these conversations between heads of state? So it wasn't like Trump was just talking to, you know, to just the two of them. People were listening in. He knew that. So can you address the fact that Adam Schiff said the transcript had something in it that it didn't?
Well, he's done that before, right? By the way, it's technically not a transcript. It was a summary of the conversation because it wasn't exactly word for word. However, he has, as I just said, exaggerated it before. I will say that the House case was very disappointing. To mention the Epoch Times again, I wrote an article when they first started this proceeding saying you need to follow due process standards, not just because that's fair, but also because due process standards make sure that you your conclusions are reliable. I mean, if you have decent cross-examination, it's hard for a tissue of lies to survive. If you allow the president to have his attorney in the hearing and call his own witnesses, you're going to come up, even if you ultimately decide to impeach, you're going to come up with a much better product. Well, they didn't do that. They put it together in a slapdash thing. I mean, Senator Murkowski made that point, I guess, yesterday. It was just disgraceful, and it has been from the beginning. You mentioned the comparison between the president's lawyers and the House managers. You know, I'm not a journalist, and so I cannot spend the time to sit listening to all these arguments. But I will point out that there were some moments where the House managers, particularly Nadler, fell on their face. I mean, Gerald Nadler is a guy who's never done anything but serve in politics. He has no business trying to prosecute a case, any case, much less a case as serious as an impeachment. And one thing you learn very early on in litigation is you don't insult the judge and the jury. Well, he did that twice by saying that they were on trial and engaged in a cover-up. I mean, for crying out loud, this is like amateur hour. And so I think the House managers did suffer from the fact that they were really not professionals at what they were doing, where people like Dershowitz and Sekulow clearly are.
Well,
and certainly Starr.
Well, and to that point, apparently Jason Crow, and I think he's supposed to be wasn't he an attorney in the military? I was thinking he was. Anyway, you know, he's one of the House managers. He's, you know, the representative from CD6 here in Colorado. And so, again, one of those that's supposed to be bringing the case against Donald Trump. And apparently he is quoting Dumbledore, talking about Dumbledore from Harry Potter. And when I heard that, I'm like, honestly, really? We're trying to impeach a president, and one of the accusers is talking about Dumbledore from Harry Potter? I mean, I thought that was kind of wild, Rob. I don't know if you were aware of that or not.
Well, it indicates that the Democrats' case was built on ledger domain and magic, right? It wasn't a real world case. I don't remember every moment of Bill Clinton's impeachment hearings, but my recollection is that Bill Clinton hired top talent. I mean, Bob Bennett, for example, was one of his lawyers, one of the top lawyers in Washington, D.C. And you just did not see that level of professionalism among the impeachment case in the impeachment case here. And I think the reason for that was that they knew this was doomed. They were catering to their party's crazies. They wanted to create a public relations splash. They knew the media would go along, and an evidence of that is the fact that as soon as the Republicans stood up to put on their case, the media distracted and started talking about Bolton's book instead, so that people wouldn't pay attention to the Republican case. And so they figured that was a way to proceed, but I don't think it's worked.
Okay, and one other thing, because I think everyday people that are kind of watching this, they're hearing that, oh my gosh, the Senate did not allow any witnesses. But over in the House is where the case was supposed to be made. And my understanding is the Democrats called 17 witnesses and Trump was able to call one. And so people need to understand that that was not a real fair due process, if you will, Rob Nadelson, and we have about a minute left.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's not the Senate's job to do the House's work for it. But actually, the Senate went beyond what it should have, in my view. The Senate amended Mitch McConnell's original resolution to provide that all the material that came from the House was automatically admitted into evidence unless specifically objected to. I think that was wrong to do that because much of that material was pure hearsay. In fact, from what I gather, most of the critical facts were just hearsay. So I would have voted against that amendment. My point is that not only did the Senate not suppress evidence, the Senate actually went farther than it should have gone in admitting evidence that was inherently unreliable and inadmissible.
Well, those are really important points, and so it's just really been a lot of political theater, but I love what you do, Rob Nadelson, this piece in the Epoch Times regarding Dershowitz, and then your intellectual integrity to go out and really check that out. I so appreciate it. So thanks so much for being with me this morning.
Thank you, and again, Epoch Times or Complete Colorado.
Okay, Rob Nadelson, you have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Okay. And Calvin Coolidge is our quote for today. He says, don't expect to build up the weak by pulling down the strong. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.